and we come away and we realize what it'll cost and that. And this week, after we'd left the office here at the church, we just thought we've got to go and pick up a couple things from Woolies, you know, just a couple things we'd forgotten. And so we pop into Woolworths and we do the shopping, we get a trolley and we come out, you know, it would have been no more than, you know, it was just a couple things, but it kind of grew, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it just kind of grew. But then again, it didn't grow past about the 15-item mark. It was about 15 items. I put them through the self-checkout, which sometimes doesn't seem so self because you always seem to have to get the lady over to help you. But anyway, so we put them through the self, and the price of it really startled me. It came up $129. I thought this was just supposed to be a couple. We were just supposed to pop in, you know, $129. You know, when we first got married, $129 would have covered us for the week for food. Now it's just a pop-in kind of thing that you do, $129. So what I'm saying is that we've noticed that possibly even since COVID, the price of food has gone up. I think that's the case, is it? Yeah. And, you know, reality is that as we go through our lives, and lately, interest rates, I mean, have gone up. If you've got a home loan at the moment, of course, that may cause some, you know, you've got to work through that because they're rising and you weren't kind of thinking they were going to rise so quickly or whatever. I know it's only kind of 0.5% at a time, but and then, you know, price of petrol, you never know where it's going to be from month to month sometimes. And of course, as I said, food bills and there's a whole bunch of stuff, you know, whatever it is. Even if you have a rental, you know, the prices, you know, from contract to contract, they can bump it up $50, $100. And so I'm saying all this to say that, you know, we live in a world that is, of course, part of our world. Reality is that we're dependent upon this thing called money. Is that right? Finance. And incorporated in finance and money is also stuff, the things we buy, the material things we have. And in those material things, there's necessities, there's needs, of course. There's things we've got to have, food, water. But there's also those things that we just desire. And we'd like to think that sometimes we're all cool about that. We don't get entangled in all that desire. But the reality is that sometimes we buy things for different reasons. And it does sometimes reflect what's happening inside us. And so today I was just aware of this and, you know, I was thinking about it. And I'm aware that Jesus actually talked about money quite a lot, and possessions and the things we own. He actually, so much so that 2/3 of his parables are engaging in this whole topic of money and the things that we own. 2/3, far out. Jesus, is Jesus believe money's more, does he talk about it more than other items and other things like love and grace? Well, I'm not quite sure about that, but he obviously addresses it because he knows within the human heart there's a need for us to keep money in the right place. Because, you know, as much as God is not against money, he's just against, you know, he's not against us having money, he's just against us, money having us. Because he knows what it does to our soul and how it can kind of grind the gears on the inside and becomes, you know, imbalanced and quite destructive. Do you know that, unfortunately, the reality of this whole money thing is that it becomes an incredible concern for people. Did you know that the medical profession now have a medical term for it? They call it this. What do they call it? They call it the money anxiety disorder, abbreviated MAD, M-A-D. There's an actual term, money anxiety disorder. Isn't that sad? You know, Jesus actually, as I said, had something to say about it. And just in one verse, he says so much. In Matthew chapter 16, 26, he says, "For what profit is it to a person if he gains," it says man, but that's generic person really, if he gains the whole what? World. And loses his own what? Soul. And then he poses, if that question isn't enough to try and contemplate, then he grabs him with another one. He's talking to his disciples and an extended group of people. And he says, "Or what will a person give in exchange for his soul?" What can we give in exchange for it? So, and we see that, unfortunately, people do the exchange. I noticed Andrew prayed a prayer this morning. He said, you know, let's do the right exchange, but there can be the wrong exchange. We exchange with maybe with the understanding, but also probably a little bit of wanting to ignore it, that we grab sometimes for the things of this world. And we're going to talk about that in a moment a little bit more. And it doesn't do us any good. In actual fact, when Jesus says lose his own soul or lose their own soul, the word loss can actually be translated into a better English word, to damage. There you go. So, you know, if we gain the whole world and damage our own soul. So Jesus says you can, this, you know, there is an element to this world where you can take the things of the possessions and just want more and more and more and actually do something within you that's quite destructive. And I find that it's sad. And you know, unfortunately, I mean, this was written 2,000 years ago. Isn't it so relevant for today? They say the second biggest problem that causes divorce and separation is the concern and anxiety over money. I don't know how exactly true that statistic is, but that's what they say. And you know, we see money can fuel tension and arguments between people. We see money causes anxiety. Money can cause sleepless nights. Money can do a lot of stuff. People can get angry. Money allows us to sometimes just get greedy. And unfortunately, if there was no greed in the world, we'd have less wars, less domestic violence, less of everything. Because I think the Bible actually says money is can be the root of all evil. Now, once again, let me emphasize, we live in a world today, you maybe buy some lunch, you buy some groceries, we need an income. So God is not trying to take away the reality that money itself is evil. It's the love of it, isn't it? And so today, what we want to do is just dive off into a little bit of a series, and I just want to talk about it because Jesus talks about it, and I think it's vitally important that we do, and particularly in relation to our soul and what happens within our soul, because he says, you know, you can, you don't want to exchange your soul for these material possessions in the world. I mean, you have house insurance, car insurance, we have all types of, you know, medical insurance, but do we have an eternal insurance for our soul, you know? More important, isn't it? So let's talk about there. And there's three things I just wanted to relate to you this morning that money will speak to us about. This is what money will say to you. And we've got to be careful of it. It'll say to all of us. And it'll always be these temptations or opportunities that rise up. You know, the greatest thing about our relationship with God is that he just wants us sometimes just to be reflective. Reflective upon what's really happening in here. And these points, I pray, that just give you a moment of reflection so that you can keep your soul healthy and away from the you know, the cliff edge that obviously the greed and the love of money will take you to. I don't want to walk along the edge of a cliff. I want to stay far away from it. You know what I'm talking about? And these are some of the things that we just got to be aware of so we don't fall over the edge and destroy our lives. So here's the three things that money will speak to your soul about. In verse 26, I've just taken out of Matthew 16, that one verse, it's got so much in it. It says, for what profit is it to a person if he gains the whole world? Now, when we read that, we know that we are not capable of gaining the whole world. No one in the world has gained the whole world. So why does Jesus make a statement like that? It's an unrealistic, it's an over-emphasized statement. Gain the whole world. No one's going to gain the whole world. No one's even come close. Some people have probably got a fair bit of the world. There's some pretty rich people in the world, but not to gain the whole world, that's not going to happen. But what does happen, why does Jesus say that, is because he knows that we have a desire sometimes, well, not even a desire, but unknowingly it can you know, encroach on our spirit and our soul, where we just have this desire to have one more thing. And we buy that one more thing, and then we find weeks, months, or even years down, we just need one more thing. Sometimes the reality is that the euphoria of buying something new becomes the actual thing that we really love, the feeling that we love of just having new, or just having one more thing that, you know, and then you get that, and you want to have that feeling again, and so you buy something else new. I think it's called we won't shopping problems anyway. What do they call that? Retail therapy. Retail therapy. Because we can all feel good about when we buy something. Hey, new. So here it is. Here's my first thing that the money will whisper to your soul. It'll say, if you just had a little bit more. If you just had a little bit more. And, you know, that happens with all of us. You know, if you just had a little bit more, if you just had a bit more of this. And there's some things that we are necessities and needs. And so we need to buy those things. You know, I understand that. God understands that. But then there's the desires. Do you really need more of that? You know, that's the question. That's the question, isn't it? Do you know, there was a statesman called Benjamin Franklin, American statesman. He was very instrumental in those early days when America was at war, civil war with each other. All these states are fighting each other, you know. And he came up and was a part of drafting the Constitution of Independence. That draft that said, you know, we've got to get together and keep in unity. So he was a man with some great insight and knowledge and wisdom. And I love some of the quotes he makes. He makes many great quotes, but one of them is just simply this. He says this: the more money people have, the more one wants. And you know, the secret, I think, to money is you may have lots of it, but not continuing. Have you ever said to yourself, I got enough? Have you ever said that? Good. It's a good question. It's a good thing to say, you know what? I've got enough. Do I really need any more? No. I think it's a great question to ask yourself, continue to ask yourself. Can I say that you and I actually live in one of the richest periods in the history of our earth, of our world. And we actually live in one of the richest nations in our earth. Richest nations. And think about this. Most people in Australia only have to work 5 days to get 7 days of food, shelter, clothing, and health care. Now you say, well, that's normal. No, it's not. Because the truth is that the reality around the world is that people find that incredibly incredibly unique, because they have to work 7 days and they don't have, and that's not even enough food for 1 week sometimes. Do you know that one wage in Australia can actually provide for more than one person? And you say, well, that's a normal. No, many cultures in the world, that type of prosperity is inconceivable to them. Inconceivable. That one wage would feed more than one person. And that's why you see people around the world. A third of the world is in that situation. And we've got, what is it, 9 billion? And so around maybe 3 billion people every day, they don't worry about that the internet is slow in that day. They just worry about, they wake up that day and think, is there enough food for me this day? A third of the population. So in saying all this, I'm not trying to minimize anyone's financial problems this morning. Please understand me. We all face, it's all comparative, and what we face today can be very real to you, and I appreciate and respect that this morning. But this morning, I am trying to just give us a little bit of perspective, because sometimes what we call problems in our society, people in other cultures and other continents of the world would gladly have my problems, and we have theirs, because they don't have the same, they have incredibly hard times. So I want to give us perspective, and I would ask you to consider yourself rich in the light of the majority of people that live on this earth. And when you can recognize that in the scheme of global population, it makes all the difference, I find, to me anyway, to my attitude and my approach to money and how we use it and what we spend it on. Because people, sometimes I find, in our very affluent, generally affluent society, I deeply respect the reality. Some people aren't affluent. They do face incredible struggles, even in our nation. But generally speaking, that sometimes we can resent what they have because of this very attitude: if I just had a little bit more. And I've come to, as I get a little older, more and more I just realize I need to be thankful for what I have. Just be thankful for where I was born. Be thankful for many things. You know, I was the other day I was looking at my television. Maybe some months ago, actually, and it was given to us. In actual fact, we inherited it from my wife's dad. He had, and he lived by himself. He passed away about 5 or 6 years ago, and so we inherited this big. I've never had such a big television. I think it's like 64 inch or 74 or something. I don't know. That's diagonal across the screen, and it's a flat television, but it's an old flat style television. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, gee, you know, it's a bit grainy. You know, you can see the pixels, and I go to Harvey Norman, and I'm going there to buy some batteries or buy something else, and I just have to wander through the television section. You know, I even wandered through Harvey Norman television, and he's got these 87, I don't know, 354 inch. I'm exaggerating, I don't know, whatever it is, and you look at it, and the pitch is so clear, it's amazing, and I just sit there and dream. Well, you know, I could get that television and that sound bar. Oh man, this is real, it'd be exciting. And I go back and I sit in front of my television, I start to resent it. And then I get a slap across the face. Thank you, Michelle. No, Michelle doesn't do that. Then I slap myself across the face, not literally. And I say, what are you thinking? You're resenting, you know, 3/4 of the world doesn't even have a television. Grow up, James. And I can see clearly. It's a good television. It's an old flat, but it's doing a great job, and I'm thankful for it. Well, I got to be thankful now. I'm preaching about it, haven't I? But just, this is the thing that happens sometimes. We, because of that little attitude that that money wants to whisper into our ear, into our soul, it wants to say, you know, if you just had a little bit more, we can become resentful for what we've got. And that's the thing that we've got to be careful. The writer of Hebrews, there's no author that we understand. The only book in the New Testament, we're not quite sure of the author, but possibly Paul. But it says in Hebrews 13:5, keep your lives free from the love of money. This is NIV. And be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. I'll repeat it. Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. You know, think about this. The author of Hebrews is saying, I know how to keep myself free from that money greed, to be free from the desire of always wanting more for the wrong reasons. Here it is. The God who created all things, the God who knows what I need is with me. That's a great place to start. And me knowing that helps me to respect the reality of my present financial situation and trust Him for my future needs. That's what we can do. We could trust that, apparently they call God Jehovah Jireh, my provider. Have you ever, he says in Malachi, just test Him on that. See that will He not open for you the windows, see that He will not provide for you. And so, one of the wonderful things is we let that voice, I just need a bit more, govern the tone of our lives, and we become discontent. And so we've got to be careful. We need to walk around realizing that we're incredibly blessed. And you know, when I started, you know, this morning I was just standing there in worship and I was just thinking about, oh, I'm just thankful for that. I'm just thankful for that. And it just changed my attitude. It does, doesn't it? You wake up in the morning thinking, oh, far out, you know, this and this and this, this problem. Why don't you wake up and sometimes just go, Father, thank you that I have a roof over my head. I know that seems very, very frivolous, but you know, praise God. Father, thank you. The sun is shining today. And then when it rains, thank you that my plants are getting watered for free. You know, that type of thing. It makes such a difference to our life. We can be discontent. And we walk around realizing I'm blessed, our resentment then actually turns into gratitude. Into gratitude. You know, we may lose our electricity, it may be blackouts, maybe once a year in this state, maybe for an hour or so, because of a lightning strike. Most of the time I can turn on the switch and the light comes on. That's pretty good, you know. You go to other countries and, you know, every day sometimes there's no power. So I'm incredibly blessed. So the first thing I'm trying to say is money will speak to you, and it says if you just had a little bit more. Here's the second thing that I want to encourage us with. Here's the second thing. Verse 26 again. For what does it profit a person if they gain the whole world? And then it says lose his own soul. The reason a person... So this is really talking about gaining the world, putting your soul on the back burner, having more of this and less of that. Now, people don't realize that when they sometimes start to put other stuff first and don't give attention to their soul, that their soul is being diminished. They don't realize it at the time, but a year down the track, we all of a sudden start to wonder, why am I so angry about life? Why am I so upset? Why am I so depressed? Why am I so worried? Why am I all these type of things? And if you just reflect it for a moment, it's because you've placed something else in the place of the priority of your soul and you're giving attention to it, which will not, it's an inanimate thing. It's not going to bless you. It won't encourage you. It's just a material thing. And that's what Jesus is talking about. He's saying, come on, be careful of that. You've got to be careful. Money says, this is what money says. Because we exchange stuff for our soul. And out of our soul, that's where our identity lays. Who we really are. That's where we discover, what am I living for? What's my purpose? Who am I here for? What's my whole, what attitude should I reflect? That's in our soul, our identity. Because who knows? You can't put your identity in a motor car because someone might dent it. And one day it'll break down. You can't put your identity in the things of this world. It's your identity needs to come, as we've just read in that passage from Hebrews, in our Heavenly Father. So here's the second point. Money says to you, it'll whisper to your soul, your self-worth is connected to your net worth. Your self-worth is connected. So what you have, if I have that, if I have more, if I have extra, if I have more than what someone else has got. I know we don't literally say this, but sometimes we can get very, very, very sneaky. Our soul can get very sneaky, can't it? And it can say those type of things, even though we say, I don't really want to think that or believe that, but that's what's happening. We can say, I don't care how I look, but every time you go past a mirror, you got to look at yourself. And we all need to have a little look at sometimes. But you know what I'm saying? We put our trust in things that are so temporary. I remember the day I was a young youth pastor, and there was a national youth conference in Tasmania, and we're going to Hobart, and I was really excited. Wow, Hobart, had to fly in one of those things called planes, and it was all exciting. Went down to Hobart, went to this national youth conference. I'm sitting around a table in a restaurant, and five youth pastors, and those were the days when the mobile phone was going from the brick to the... to the block. It was a bit smaller than... And so one of the youth pastors put his mobile phone, it was about this big, he put it on the table and no one said a word, but within 10 minutes, everyone pulled their phone out. I got one too. And I thought, in reflection upon that moment, I thought, how sad that we have to connect our worth to something that we own. I repented of it. And I thought, how ridiculous, how silly. That's a sad day. I remember I went to a conference in Brisbane once as a pastor. I had to go to a conference and someone had given me a briefcase. It was, probably only a $30 one, but it was a briefcase. I walked in that conference with my briefcase. I got a briefcase. I know I didn't say that, but that's what I was saying. How sad I had to connect my worth to the things of this world. And that's what money will say to us sometimes. Your net worth is connected to your self-worth. Where do we get that idea? It's this attitude to measure our value by the value of our things. Generally speaking, the population of the world doesn't follow God, okay? There's millions and millions and millions and millions of Christians, but compared to the population, they don't follow God. There's a culture, and because we don't follow God, there's a great culture that places great value on what we have, and it becomes, in some ways, the natural thing to do. That's what people worship. because we're all made to worship something. I've said this before. We're all made to worship something. It's just that when you come to church, you exchange your worship for things sometimes and situations to worshiping Him. So if there's no God, if you follow this line of thought, if there's no God creator of heaven and earth, then all that exists is the material stuff of life. And if there's no God from where we can derive our value, then we're looking around us and we're seeking to derive our value from stuff. And that's what generally happens within the world. Generally. Not everybody. There's a lot of non-Christians who don't necessarily follow that. That's good. But I'm just saying generally, that's where our heart will sometimes go. Because we were made to put something in that place of priority in our lives. And you all know people who place a lot of other stuff in this world as a priority in their life. And it's sad because it's destroying them. Sometimes put their body as that place that they put first. Sometimes it's, as we know, the latest and greatest gadgets. So it's little wonder that people are connecting their self-worth with their net worth. And Jesus, being aware of our human tendency to worship stuff more than God, says, verse 26, "For what profit is a person if he gains the whole world but loses his own soul?" Jesus, straight away, did you notice here, he goes straight from wealth to talking about the soul. He goes from talking about material things to the soul, the dwelling place of our identity. Can you see that? Let's be careful that we don't slip into this culture of self-worth being connected to my net worth, because when you do, you can. When you don't, you can either live in a castle or a caravan, and the reality is you'll realize that you don't have to have your inherited value in whatever you have. You have your inherited value as an image bearer of a Heavenly Father, Creator God. That's where our identity lies. And we can have a firm foundation in the self-worth of what God thinks of us. And you know what? Prosperity doesn't inflate me. And of course, poverty doesn't deflate me either. Whether I've got much, what did Paul say? I've had much and I've had little. But ultimately, my trust is in Christ. I've been shipwrecked. I've been at the house of rich people and ate with them, and, you know, paraphrasing it. And yet I've been in the most lowly places of jails and prisons, and yet, you know, my Christ. In Him I live and move and have my being. So when we have that kind of firm foundation of self-worth in God, we can have a robust individual thought process that we can help us handle the seasons of life, and we don't get puffed up with pride and we don't shrivel up with insecurity. And when I understand that my value is never connected to what I have in my bank account, it's connected to God. The wonderful thing about that is then I can disentangle my emotions from, disentangle my identity from my stuff I place at a distance between, and it places that at a distance. And then I understand that there's a distance between who I am and what I have. And I'm glad for what I have, and I'm thankful for what I have, but who I am, it's always going to be here with Him. And that's a great way to live. That's a place of freedom, folks. That's a place of freedom. And you know, when I can have that kind of attitude, then I can make objective decisions about my wealth and what I should happen to it, so that I'm not all screwed up trying to think, oh, I need to sell this, I need to buy more. No, we can have peace because my identity is not in my finance or my stuff. It's all tied up in Him, and it makes such a difference in how we make decisions then. So here's number three. The first one was, you know, it'll say just a little bit more. The second one, your self-worth is connected to your net worth. But the third thing that the money can say to us is, when you get that, then I'll be happy. You fill in that. When I get that, I'll be happy. Once again, you and I would never say that, but it's amazing how you can walk through Harvey Norman and look at televisions and say, if I have that, that's going to be great. We all have appetites, not food appetites. We all have appetites, and our appetites are not necessarily wrong. Appetites, you know, whatever it may be. Have a nice pair of shoes, wear a watch that tells the time. You know, they could be needs and not just desires. But playing upon our natural appetites, money says, if you just get that house, if you just get that, it'll be better. Now, if you just get that, whatever. So money has a way to whisper in our ear, if you just get that, then you'll be happier. Do you know, when I moved to Gladstone as a 10-year-old, mum and dad bought a very simple house. It was a house, and in those days, they'd built suburbs of Gladstone, and they'd taken the topsoil off to reclaim land in the harbour. And so the house they built in this suburb, all the topsoil had been taken off, and our house was literally on rock and dirt. And that's okay. Mum and Dad finally got some kind of green stuff growing there. I remember as a 10-year-old, I'd come from this wonderful place in Gympie where we had a lawn. And when I came to Gladstone, all I wanted was a lawn. Isn't that interesting as a 10-year-old what you remember and what you want? And when I bought eventually a house with a lawn, you know what? I was really excited. But in the end, it never made me happier. I always remember when I was in Gympie. Gympie was more advanced than Gladstone in those days because Gympie had toilets inside your house. When you came to Gladstone, if you've been here early days of Gladstone, they had these things outside the house. And they weren't septic systems, they were just a thunderbox, they used to call them. And a guy every week could come. I don't know how, you'd have to pay me a lot of money to do his job. Let's leave it at that. But I remember him walking out with that can on his shoulder. I'm going, oh, buddy, bless you, you're amazing. But anyway, you know, all I wanted when I come to Glasgow was a toilet that flushed. Eventually we got one. But it didn't make me any happier. Ultimately. So there's always this thing about being happy. We should be happy. I think Christians should be the happiest people on the earth. Jesus knows we have appetites. And he says, and the reality is that happiness shouldn't be dictated to by what is in the world. Happiness should need to be dictated by the fact that I'm in this world with an incredible opportunity to serve a wonderful God who loves me and cares for me. And out of that can be great peace. And so you are not pushed to and fro around by the seasons of life that come and go, good and bad, economies up and down. You know, winter's a sad time, summer's a great time. No. We're not forced into, there's a happiness that underlying in our life, it just is this peace we can have and happiness. Because we know, hey, this world does not need to make me sad or glad. And in verse 26, he says, what will a person give in exchange for his soul? A great question. Jesus is saying, don't give up those inner values that you have in there. Okay, don't give up your soul of peace and joy and integrity and honesty and all those character traits and good emotions for something that you think will make you feel better when it won't ever. Now, if you need the thing and it's a need, buy it. That's great. And it will make you feel a bit excited. Who doesn't get excited about maybe buying a new car? Of course, there's some excitement about it. But the reality is that your whole worth or your whole life, it won't necessarily make you happy because cars, as I said, when the first time it gets scratched, you go, oh, I've got to sell it and get a new one. No. You know what Paul actually said to Timothy in the New Testament? The mentor said to the mentoree, Paul to Timothy, 1 Timothy 6, he said this, those who are rich in this present age are not to be proud, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation of the future, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Paul says there's no way to take hold of that, take hold of that life, but there is a way to take hold of that life, I should say, and there's some little wonderful principles just here in what he says. Paul says, if God prospers you, great. And then he says, do good, be generous, be willing to share with others. There he says, there he is, there's the key. Here's the truth. Every time I give, every time I share, every time I give my money to do good in the lives of another person, or I give stuff to people or help them, I what is happening is I break the power of materialism in my life. Well, I hope so anyway. That's the theory. But I could break the power of that material. I master my appetites instead of them mastering me. And the Bible says I lay hold of that which is truly life. Whether you have little or much. Remember the lady who came into the temple with a widow's mite? That's such a small, minuscule amount of money, and yet she put it in. Jesus is watching people put it in. Someone come along and put a lot of money in compared to her, but Jesus says she gave the most. Why? Because she gave out of what she had, not out of her excess. And so and so we see the reality of this whole thing. That what's important here? Her happiness wasn't about how much she gave, her happiness was that she could give. Because if you're looking at what other people give, she gave very little, and she could say, oh, I couldn't give that amount. But you know what? Jesus says, yeah, no, she's got it worked out. You know, she's just able to give out of what she had, not out of the excess. So as the team come today, I've said this before, and you can write this. You can write this. You can say this at my funeral because this is one of my quotes for life. You make a living out of what you get, but you make a life out of what you give. Hey, you make a living out of what you get, but you make a life out of what you give. And I think when it really comes down to it, one of the most rewarding things that we could do is be generous with what we have. Generous. And you can be generous whether you have little or you have much. That's not the issue. Really not talking about the size of your wallet this morning. We're really talking about the size of your heart, the size of your soul. So here we go. Money talks to you. We need to be aware of that. We need to be aware of our sneaky parts of our soul that just wants to grab a hold of things sometimes. And we need to say, hey, that's not what needs to be my motivation. We need to realize that it'll whisper to us if you only had a little more. But that's chasing after the wind, Solomon said, because he had it all and it wasn't enough. He says it's like chasing after the wind. Money will say your identity and your worth are connected to what you've got, but it isn't true. Don't listen to it. Your worth is in who you are in God. Listen, this morning, God can't love you any more than he does. Whether you're good or bad, he'll just continue to love you. It's amazing. He mightn't agree with everything we do, but he just continues to love us. He continues to. And thirdly, not only does it say we want a little bit more, not only does it say your identity is connected to your net worth is connected to your personal worth, but money will say if you had that, you'll be happy, which isn't true, because happy isn't a thing. It's an attitude that you embrace every day, whether you have little or you have lots. Can we stand this morning? We're just going to worship for a moment and as we close today. And you know, maybe today as you sat there, you're thinking, yeah, I've got a hold of this. That's cool. I understand that, James. But you can think of people today that are just so wrapped up in who they are or what they are or what they have. Or, you know, it's a great time just to be prayerful for them. Because I want to be honest with you, it's destroying their life. And I pray that that won't be something that's destroying your life today. Because I've discovered there is a God who loves me just as I am. Amen. And I've discovered that I can trust him with what I have and what I haven't got. And I live in a pretty blessed world in this nation of Australia. So I'm just going to be thankful for what I got. And when it maybe is taken away from me, I'm still going to be thankful for what I got. Well, that's the theory anyway. It'll get tested. But we have an incredible Heavenly Father that he says, you know, I am the lover of your soul, which is wonderful. So let's just worship for a moment today. There's one last song as we close.